Spontaneous thought also appeared to be more powerful than designed thought, almost as if its energy was taken from a higher level. Intending to create something via thought could be laborious and led often to poor results. 130. The other thing I was keen to investigate, because it was such a big part of the reality of the higher dimensions, was modes of transport. Traveling via thinking is only possible if you know the place you wish to visit. The only other way of moving about, other than walking, floating or flying, is by focusing on a landmark in the distance and then appearing spontaneously at the spot in the blink of an eye. I discovered this when I became frustrated about my unsatisfactory flying efforts. When I saw a tree in the distance and wished to be there, I found myself there instantly. Another experiment I carried out was to see how easy it was to penetrate solid objects. I talked to a young lady, after introducing myself as a visitor from planet Earth, about how easy it was to deal with solid objects in her world. Slightly amused, she looked at me, then assumed a kung fu pose and with her bare hand chopped cleanly helps dramatically in the fulfillment of people's dreams. People for obvious reason regard this as a kind of heaven, like a lottery jackpot win. It is easy to understand that a general atmosphere of happiness and goodwill comes about when everyone is living the dream. In such places there is an eagerness to party and to share joy. People are generally very friendly and accommodating, also much more tolerant and forgiving than people appear on planet Earth. Reality of this worldly paradise should, as I have mentioned before, appeal to anybody who plays the lottery and dreams about the big win and a life in luxury. There are, however, things we can do in physical life that will greatly enhance the enjoyment of our pleasure in other dimensions. Simply by spending our time here more effectively, by learning certain skills which will greatly enhance our pleasures, we can achieve great happiness after death or in dreams. One thing I have found necessary to learn in order to enjoy myself more fully on the next dimension is an attitude of generosity and positivity. On that dimension, such characteristics enhance our capacity for enjoyment exponentially, while mean-spiritedness and negativity will hinder us to reach this level. It appears that any activity that directs attention towards giving and enhancing happiness and pleasure to others will create the psychological setup in ourselves to open the floodgates for receiving pleasure on the higher dimensions. This becomes very obvious when studying life on this realm. Through a solid wooden post with a theatrical shout, bringing a big grin to my face. Although nearly a foot thick, the post offered no resistance and she left no sign of damage, leaving it still in one piece. I had assumed the right of will would have seen it tumble to the ground. I braced myself to try a similar experiment, but instead of using a wooden post I tried my luck on a solid stone wall. My fist met the wall and passed straight through, but not without encountering a rubbery kind of resistance. I started to relax. I no longer felt the urgency of the excursion. I felt as if I could relax with all the time in the world and enjoy my stay like I would do on holiday back on Earth. The serenity of being in our another dimension with enhanced clarity of mind and wakeful eye alertness was almost overwhelming. Pondering the fact that I was in another reality in another world filled me with great joy, excitement and anticipation. I was so alert and awake that I did not even have to worry about drifting into sleep or having to focus my attention on maintaining waking consciousness. Simply, I had arrived on a different plane, and I was myself. For a moment I wondered whether I had been careless and had severed my connection with my body for good and had entered the land of the dead, but that wasn't the case. I could feel the luminous laser-like fiber of my connecting cord dangling from the back of my head like a limp, thin thread. There was no pull to return back to my physical self. Presently, I was walking down the higher dimensional counterpart of Christchurch Road in Boscombe, Bournemouth, near where we lived. Again, it wasn't the landmarks that made me recognize the place, rather the atmosphere. Although I knew clearly the road I was in, the buildings were all different. There was an unhurried quality of life here. It was friendly and peaceful. This was indeed the place to have holidays, the super holiday resort. There were bars and shops, which were more like little galleries where the owner could display their creative skill. I saw a shop which had very novel glass and crystal four poster and other beds on display. On the physical level, they would have struck me as uncomfortable, but without body mass weight to worry about, I could imagine that crystal could have a very invigorating effect on the spirit. Attracted by loud noise and a jovial atmosphere, I strayed into a nearby pub. I thought it would be good to get more involved with the locals. People enjoy themselves in bars on Earth, especially when alcohol lowers their inhibitions, but the people here had taken enjoyment onto another level altogether. They interacted free-spiritedly and were amazingly relaxed around one another. This pub in particular was a very vibrant place. I saw people frolicking and flirting provocatively in front of everyone else without any self-consciousness whatsoever. The absence of inhibition and a prevailing feeling of solidarity, friendship and intimacy was something I had never experienced before. There was certainly a feeling of sexuality in the air. The atmosphere tingled with it. I saw a woman not wearing a top quite openly showing her affection to her aroused boyfriend. There was something liberating about the absence of any scruples. This was a group where everyone was in agreement. They all enjoyed the jovial and free-spirited atmosphere. Still very conscious of my scientific intentions, I thought to venture into a more sociological form of study. I asked a man next to me whether there were any problems with morality in this world, whether anyone ever took offense to what happened here. A few people around me responded as if I had just posted the most ridiculous question in the world. To my utter astonishment, but to the great amusement of the others, two men took out their penises and blew them up to ridiculous proportions. Encouraged by such amusement, and with the power of their strange imagination, they twisted and contorted their sexual organs into the most ludicrous shapes. Then the women joined in and competed with each other by changing their bare breast into any kind of fruits that one could think of. The hilarity of the display was very contagious and like everyone else I fell about laughing. Soon the whole pub was engaged in the game. I was much that I felt I would not be able to stop. Gradually it all calmed down and I wanted to know whether I too had the power to change my shape. With an effort of will I grew myself to about 10 feet tall, accompanied by loud cheering and applause from the crowd. 133 My conclusion was that these people had no problems enjoying their body and sexuality. They were all in it together. There was nobody who would object, because they were attracted to each other simply by functioning on the same level. I left the pub and decided to explore other parts of the town. I had read many books on life after death and there appeared to be a consensus among the authors that night was something that simply could not exist. I was surprised to find when walking through the street, still on the same counterpart of Bournemouth, that it was night time. But maybe it was not night time at all, and more like a dim, not unpleasant light. It felt like a rather warm glow of intimacy and comfort. The other thing I noticed was the absence of roads. There was only pavement, like the whole place was pedestrianized. Years later, when returning to Bournemouth physically, I discovered that these parts of Boscombe had indeed become pedestrianized. The overall appeal was much nicer as a result. The houses lining the road were much wealthier and in a much better condition, and there were many more shops than I had at first thought, although they were not packed together quite as closely as on the physical plane. Most of the displays in the windows showed beautiful pieces of art and creation, but there were also kitsch oddities that reassuringly broke with high standards of good taste. It made the place even more appealing that there was an overall tolerance towards mixtures of styles, self-expression and standards of quality. However, there was something about this place, despite the good time I was having, which was rather at odds with how I felt. Then I realized what it was. I did not belong here. I was a tourist only, a passing visitor, and I was yearning to move on. I looked into the deep sky and found it studded with bright and beautiful stars. As I gazed up, I felt myself lifting off the ground and drifting into the air, forlorn in my own thoughts and with a strong desire to be taken by a superior force into a higher realm. Despite all the wealth of pleasures and amusement to be here, the limitations of this world became suddenly very apparent. There was an absence of any spirituality, which made me feel like a stranger. This was a basic world with rather crude emotions. Sadly, no higher force took me into another, more refined, more beautiful, more spiritual realm than this one. I descended slowly to the road and walked along the street, deep in thought and enveloped in slight melancholy. I had grown accustomed to the environment. As I walked along, I became aware of a middle-aged couple coming towards me. They were different from the other inhabitants, and I recognized them immediately as dreamers, holiday makers in the truest sense, studying their surroundings interestedly. I drifted close by them. Curiously enough, I bumped into my wife Julia, but she always drifted away until I found her again standing in front of the church hall, staring at a bubble-shaped object 15 feet in diameter. It was made almost entirely of glass. Inside was a comfortable chair with a man resting on it. As we approached, he got up and left the bubble. I then knew that he was not the owner. I stuck my head inside through the round opening hatch and marveled at its simple construction. The seat was molded into the bubble, blending seamlessly with it. With a slight amusement, I thought it looked like a design project an art student may have handed in at his college final year show, hoping to pick up an award or a good design job with a future employer. No consideration was given to functionality, and I thought it was a typical case of design over function. Then with a jolt, I remembered that it was mine. It was my creation, and I remembered that in my waking life I often wondered what it would be like to explore the entire universe inside the most simple spacecraft, being powered by nothing other than thought. Now I knew why the man left when he saw me. Julia jumped inside with me. I could not spot any technical devices or instruments whatsoever, although it was quite clear to me that this was a craft of some kind. I employed the thought of upward movement and we shot straight up into the night sky. We went on a long excursion, visiting numerous planets, but that is the only thing I remember, apart from the fact that at the time I thought it would be impossible, far too incredible to even record a fraction of the events. Hence, on my return, almost everything of this amazing journey was blotted out. 135 many years later, when I was earning my living as a 3D artist, I often wondered whether some of these scenes may have filtered back from a distant unconscious memory onto my digital canvas. Of all the realizations one can have in a lifetime, there cannot be anything more exciting than finding yourself transported into a new universe where the laws of nature you are accustomed to simply do not apply. The realization of such freedom, to go wherever you wish, to do whatever you want, has no parallel in this physical world. If in 1976 I was offered the choice between having all the money in the world to buy any luxury I wished for, or, alternatively, being able to enter the gates of another universe at night, I would most certainly have picked the second option. Visiting other worlds, which I speculated might one day be our permanent abode, where we commuted to and fro with unrestricted freedom, was a prospect too incredible not to wish for. I wondered whether people would still exert the tremendous effort of work and sacrifice to acquire worldly goods, committing crimes if necessary, if they realized that all they had to do was to bide their time, lead a decent life, spiritualize their consciousness so that it would vibrate on a more exalted level, and simply wait for the gates of death to open for them and see their wildest dreams come true. I also realized that our ambitions and motivations, our dreams and yearning, might be based on distant memories of the dimensions beyond, which had found their way into mythology and fantasy fiction. Yet in 1976 I was only experiencing the humble beginnings of my great adventure. The more I thought about it, the more obsessed I became. Little by little, with every experience in ever higher dimensions, the thing that I began to appreciate most of all was that dreams and the next dimensions are closely related. In the same way that we might sit in the office daydreaming or fantasizing about our holiday or the life we wish to lead, we can experience those fantasies on the next dimension. We refer to these as dreams, because we lack waking awareness. A little bit of training could change all this. Awareness in the dream state really is something of extraordinary potential. Next headline, Intermediate Dimensions. Living the dream. As mentioned, my visiting other dimensions did not happen in any kind of order. From one experience to the next, I found myself soaring in blissful realms to trudging through sludge on the lower levels. The reason for this is that I was dealing with states of consciousness, not a chronological evolution. However, people dwelling on the higher levels will have evolved enough to have attuned themselves to a much more positive state of mind and hence will be able to enjoy higher creative power and fluid subtlety of the matter around them. One could draw a parallel to the psychology of human nature to get an idea of what the psychological equipment would have to be like for a person to find entry into these much more enviable realms. The qualities needed are in tune with the essential nature of creation. In moral terms, they would be altruistic, with the realization that there is no real distinction between different energy forms, whether they are man, animal, or any other form of consciousness. There is an intuitive realization that everything is derived from the same source and united by the same source. Friendships are strong and very rewarding on the higher dimensions because everyone is a kindred spirit. The only selfish interest at work is that for self-development and the fulfillment of long-cherished dreams, which in any case are not pursued at the cost of others. Quite the opposite, they are encouraged and pursued to the delight of others. Individuals living here have developed an interest in the greater good of all life. The inhabitants are positive, happy, cheerful and generally nurturing of a sense of humor. They are creative, expansive, generous, tolerant, kind, and all the other positive characteristics that form the basis of an environment. Because they have harmonized their psychological makeup, they are in a constant state of creativeness with the fabric and matter around them. Their life is one big holiday. Their body finds a vibrant youthfulness, which even at their peak they wouldn't have experienced on Earth. Where on Earth they may have yearned for a makeover to banish physical defects, body weight or the signs of aging, here they find that their physical appearance is in direct proportion to the attractiveness of their expanding awareness. All people here are attractive, their individualities unfolded. Here it becomes fully apparent what a beautiful species we are. The attractiveness of men and women is expressed in millions of different nuances of beauty. The harmony and beauty of their personalities is expressed on their features. The ones I met were always very friendly and positive. The great diversity of mankind finds its greatest expression on the higher levels. Vast regions are allocated to individuals with similar interests and with unlimited ways of expressing them. It is perhaps useful to consider how dreams manifest on these levels, what laws govern them. I would like to illustrate it with an example of a person who always wished on Earth to own a powerful Lamborghini supercar. Now, on a higher dimension, he is realizing his dream to the minutest detail. How does a supercar like this come into existence? Does it show every individual functioning part of the engine, or is it just imagined, like a shell with no engine and driven by thought power, because the driver is not a mechanic and can't imagine it? Surprisingly, the supercar is in every respect a simple replica of its Earth counterpart. The reason for this is that the creative for on the higher dimensions are drawn from the universal matrix. WF contains the energy pattern of everything that is already in existence on a plane of the universe, whether it is just thought of or a physical reality. A person's energy is aligned to the environment, their wishes or expectations call upon the matrix, which materializes the supercar in front of his eyes. The same is true for all the luxury items we crave for in Earth life, but cannot have because of financial limitations. But the things we manifest on the higher levels are the real thing. However, this is not always the case on the lower levels, because it is entirely dependent on the quality of our energy and our alignment with the enjoyable life in a very agreeable 138 matrix. The materialization may fail, or produce poor results, as in the case of my wine experiment, so the person will have to work to synchronize their character to have their wishes granted. This in turn shows that the laws of evolution work throughout all dimensions. In addition to this, each creative thought or desire extends to the matrix. We will find that movies made on Earth are a physical reality on other planes because tens of thousands of people have been watching them and adding their passion and joy, both powerful instruments for manifestation. The environments may fade over time, but are re-established quickly when new attention is directed towards them. The same applies to books of fiction, where the combined forces of imagination create a vast and open matrix, which responds to anyone showing an interest by supplying a material reality. I shall leave it to the imagination of the reader to ponder the infinite possibilities of worlds such as these. Anything that can be imagined is a reality here. It is easy to understand the temptation of people wanting to spend centuries in this world in order to explore its infinite possibilities. One question which puzzled me for a long time was whether there were worlds uninhabited by intelligent life in the next dimension, just as they are in our physical universe. I believe I found the answer in the experiences reported in the next journal entry. I noticed over the years that everything in the physical dimension has a super-dimensional counterpart by way of the fact that on a higher dimension the complexity and abundance of creation becomes more profound. It seems there is a trickle-down effect. For example, the combined essential power of millions of species of dandelion focuses its energy to produce a single species on planet Earth. I can sense immediately a reaction of what nonsense, as obviously dandelions have evolved and specialized over millennia, and yet I cannot help but see that there is a sustaining essence at work, operating on a higher dimension. I have the feeling that sooner or later science will have to accept that everything on this physical world is subject to the laws of a super dimension. Once this is fully understood, man's scientific progress will explode into life. With quantum physics and the innovations it has brought about, like superconductivity, we are edging closer and closer to other dimensions. Soon there, we'll be able to leap into the next 139 settlers on another planet, 21st of November 2007 early morning. I got up to meditate, still a little tired. After doing my breathing exercise I went into deep meditation, but I was having a hard time concentrating. Instead of focusing easily on the mantra, I became drowsy and found myself involved in a battle against sleep. I could have left it there and then, gone back to bed and just slept, but I didn't. Something inside me wanted to prove that I could conquer sleep. Heavy visions drifted past me over which I had almost no control. I just, had to tear myself away from them and return to the mantra. It was as if I was walking through treacle. There was a heaviness I couldn't fight any longer and soon dreams carried me off into another world. At first I didn't even realize that I was dreaming. We had landed on another planet and enjoyed frolicking around along the beach, enjoying ourselves splashing in the water and chasing large fish. I say we, because I was in a group of about five people, all of whom appeared to be friends and yet none whom I remembered from Earth. Boundaries will blur and then, possibly, we universe. To me it is inconceivable that this physical universe stands on its own, brought about by a big bang coming from nowhere. Very soon scientists will look upon this outdated hypothesis with embarrassment. Research will prove that a super universe, with many others above it, is essential to explain our existence. The out-of-body traveler will take a bolder step and state that the super-universes are many times more abundant and complex than this trickle-down universe we inhabit. The mind boggles when it tries to understand the astonishing expanse of this physical universe alone. We only have to pick out a tiny speck of light in the night sky and realize that this speck is a cluster of hundreds of galaxies, each containing billions of stars and possibly millions of planets able to sustain physical life forms, and our mind starts freaking out. Now imagine this is just a trickle-down version of events in the next dimension. If we marvel at the power of creation just in our physical universe, well, just imagine. I-140 we were bound together, having appeared here as a group, so to speak. A large spaceship was perched precariously on a huge gherkin-like rock poking out a few hundred feet high from the water. I can't remember whether it was us who had parked it there or whether it had been there all along. I only knew that I was dreaming when I started chasing after some sea lions underwater and realized that I could breathe. Immediately, I started seeing things differently. I pointed it out to my fellow companions. They looked at me as if I was mad. "Of course this is not a dream," they seemed to say. "W hat is tire I matter with you?" I looked at the large spaceship sitting on the rock high above us. The rock, overgrown by green vegetation, was truly from another world. Whether it was the nature of the stone, which was totally unfamiliar, or its weird shape that was telling me we were on a different planet, I was unable to tell, but somehow I knew. There were dozens of fantastically beautiful monster rocks like this strewn across the water like islands. Some of them had large caves carved in their bases, and I wondered what power was at work that kept them upright. On Earth they would have long succumbed to gravity. I wondered how we had got here, and I had a vague recollection of having traveled through space, remembering passing a strange planet, but that was when I was still dreaming and I couldn't be sure. What I was sure of was that this was not some parallel dimension of Earth, but a different planet altogether, far from the exalted parallel counterparts I had always been able to associate with Earth. This was different. It felt strange and alien. A non-consensus environment, something created in some other part of the universe by the same forces that had created the rest of the physical and non-physical universes. The light was different too. Not unpleasant, it had a rather pinky warm glow. Looking at the horizon, I saw a vast mountain range much taller than one would normally expect. I remembered on Earth looking out over the sea at a cloud line over the distant horizon and imagining they were large mountains. By judging the aspect ratio of distance and height of the mountains, I thought they would have to be tens of miles high. 141 It was only when two of my friends suggested we split our group into two that the entire immensity of this experience dawned upon me. Here I was, fully awake. No, not fully awake. Super awake, with a clarity of consciousness and a sharpness to my visual and auditory senses I hadn't experienced on Earth for a long time. This alone thrilled me immensely. It filled me with utter joy. I knew I had to be disciplined and be mindful that strong emotion would cut the experience short and make me wake up in my chair, probably slumped over, not meditating at all. But this was just so exciting. Not only the clarity of my consciousness, but also the fact that I had probably traveled countless light years into another part of the universe was too staggering and too astonishing not to get excited about. My friends appeared to be much more matter-of-fact about this novel condition and calmly discussed who should explore what and who should go with whom. It was this calm rationality which kept me rooted in this alternate universe. Their sober example was just what I needed. Three of the group made for the large mountain range, while two of us, a young lady and myself, stayed behind to explore the surroundings closer at hand. I expressed concern that we might lose each other on this vast planet if we split up. It was not something anybody else seemed to worry about. A short distance along the seafront, we came upon a small town. It was built mainly in a neoclassic style. Everything about it oozed wealth and prosperity. There were people milling about in fashions that wouldn't have looked out of place in 20s or 30s Earth. Gentle folk went about in chauffeur-driven Rolls-Royce-style cars. It was like going back in time. We passed a 1920s Bentley, black, as one would expect. I got close enough to admire the chrome trimming. It was incredible. It was just as I would have expected it to look if I went into a car museum on Earth and looked at a fully restored car. I brushed my hand over the paintwork and inspected it closely. There were even micro scratches like I observed when polishing my own car. This was almost more astonishing than the whole scene surrounding us. How could the minds that created this car give it such astonishing attention to detail? 142 were taking a stroll on the CI in charge of this place.